Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a bizarre attempted armed coup by the founder of the Tea Party organization Freedom Works, Dick Armey, in which he took back control only to later accept an $8 million payoff from a wealthy donor to go away. Kenneth Vogel, the chief investigative reporter for Politico, joins us to discuss disarray inside the conservative movement since Obama's re-election and Obama's return to the White House from vacation in Hawaii to await a last-minute deal on the so-called fiscal cliff with only 5 days left before the U.S. hits the debt ceiling limit. Then we will speak with a member of the Syrian opposition and of the Day After group of prominent Syrians planning to take over when Assad falls. Muhaf Juizati, a professor of Middle East Studies at the National Defense University, joins us to discuss the latest high-level defection from the regime and reports that Iran is planning a guerrilla war inside Syria to destabilize any future government. Then finally, we'll discuss whether Obama will cave on the nomination of Senator Hagel for Secretary of Defense and also look into the once and future Prime Minister of Japan, Shinzo Abe, who unveiled his new cabinet today and vowed to enact bold economic policies to reverse stagnation and deflation. Steve Clemens, the Washington editor-at-large for The Atlantic and co-founder with Chalmers Johnson of the Japan Policy Research Institute, joins us to discuss the fate of the Hagel nomination and the comeback of the former Japanese prime minister, the seventh premier in 6 years, who served for a year in 2006, only to be ousted ignominiously on the grounds of ill health. Joining us now is Kenneth Vogel, the chief investigative reporter for Politico, who tracks the confluence of money, politics, and influence. He has covered politics and government at all levels, from small-town cop shops and school boards to state houses, Congress, and the presidential campaign trail, traveling during the 2008 race with the campaigns of Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Sarah Palin, and Joe Biden. More recently, he has covered the growth of the Tea Party and the Tea Party movement and the super PACs. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kenneth Vogel.
Hey, great to be with you, Ian.
And Ken, we'll get to this bizarre story of Dick Armey, which you've covered. I know it happened back in September, but let's just talk about for a moment with what's happening today. The president gets back from Hawaii to the White House tonight. I imagine he might well be there by now. And tomorrow, the Senate convenes. The House hasn't said what they're doing. They've been in conference calls, apparently. What's the president going to do? Is he twiddling his thumbs and trying to shame them into action?
Well, the White House did float a much smaller sort of fallback option last week, and they continue to be in talks with that with Republicans about that, but have found very little support among Republicans in the Senate. Much less in the House, which is going to be much tougher and less fertile ground for them. So it's unclear. What we did see from the administration was the Treasury Department and Tim Geithner announcing in a letter to congressional leaders today that the government would hit the debt limit on December 31st on the New Year's Eve day and then have to take, quote, extraordinary measures, end quote, to avoid exhausting the government's borrowing limit in the new year. It's unclear what that means. It seems clear that that was intended to light a fire under congressional leaders. It doesn't seem to have been effective.
Well, but the debt ceiling limit was the reason why this whole sequester, which has led to the fiscal cliff, happened. It was the fact that the Tea Party rebelled over the debt ceiling limit, which had never happened before. So one would assume that they're going to be even more upset about the debt ceiling happening on Monday as opposed to sometime in mid-February, which I believe was the original estimation. It's happening over a month earlier, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And then the announcement of it in such dramatic fashion, as the talks appear to be at a complete impasse, does seem to be a bit of political theater. Then again, having just witnessed, as you referenced earlier, the debt ceiling debate, in 2011, there was that also struck a lot of folks as a bit of political theater. And you know, this arrangement that they reached that would sort of prompt this automatic sequester spending cuts across the board was really entitled, was really intended to, increase the sense of urgency among Republicans in particular, that if they were not able to reach a larger deal, that there would be cuts closer to home, close to where they least want to see cuts in defense spending. Now it appears as if we are getting closer and closer to that point. And it's really, I think, if you talk to veteran Washington watchers who predict all kinds of possible ways that this could play out, I don't personally see any sort of resolution here. And I think the folks who suggest that they know what's going to happen are engaging in a bit of speculative punditry that there might not be a whole lot of basis for.
But again, Ken Vogel, the chief investigative reporter for Politico, who tracks the confluence of money, politics, and influence, this is circumstance piling on circumstance. You can make the argument that this fiscal cliff is something of a fiction and the world is not going to end if we go over it. In fact, if we go over it, it might be one of the few ways that some real revenues will get raised. The debt ceiling, if you go to the mat on the debt ceiling as the Tea Party did last time, you can do some serious economic damage. Remember, as a result of the first time they did it, or the last time they did it, the U.S. got downgraded.
Yeah, well, we've seen a bit of reaction in the stock market already, where at each point at which there appeared to be the possibility of some progress in these talks over the fiscal cliff, and ultimately to yield nothing, the stock market took a dive. And I think, if we don't have a resolution here in the days before this December 31st deadline that Secretary Geithner has now thrown out there, you're probably going to see more of that. And you're right, Republicans were blamed for that, and the Tea Party was blamed for that downgrade and was blamed for the sort of situation that we're in now. Again, at that point, it appeared that Republicans sort of had the upper hand to some extent as a result of the mandate that many deduced out of the 2010 midterm elections, where Republicans, and with the aid of Tea Party groups, including FreedomWorks, which we'll talk about here shortly, but also Tea Party activists, really did send a message about spending, about government spending, and it was one that the newly elected members of the Tea Party Congress took quite literally to their detriment and to the detriment of the party, which we saw play out in the 2012 elections, where now Democrats appear to have the mandate. That's what the elections were about. They were about this idea that higher taxes on the wealthy were necessary in order to get our nation's fiscal house in order. That's the message that most Democrats took out of President Obama's reelection and their gains in the Senate and the House. And the Republicans in the House in particular do not seem to have taken that same message out of it.
Again, I'm speaking with Kenneth Vogel, who's a chief investigative reporter for Politico, who tracks the confluence of money, politics, and influence. And more recently, he has covered the growth of the Tea Party movement and the super PACs. And let's turn to the story which Politico had some time back. The Washington Post is carrying a story about it today, about Dick Armey's attempted armed coup of the Tea Party. Was it back in, back in September that Dick Armey, the chairman and former House Majority Leader, went into the headquarters of FreedomWorks, where he had been in charge, along with his wife Susan and an aide carrying a holstered handgun at the waist, who turns out to be a former Capitol policeman. Apparently, the aide escorted FreedomWorks' top two employees off the premises. The armed fellow, while Armey suspended several other people, who then subsequently broke down in tears, and I believe he reinstated them. And then 6 days later, on September the 10th, Dick Armey agreed to a severance package of an $8 million and the five ousted employees coming back. Apparently, all this was done by Richard J. Stevenson, a reclusive Illinois millionaire who is basically one of the big funders of FreedomWorks. So that's the broad strokes. Walk us through this in the context of general disarray in the conservative movement since the re-election of Barack Obama.
Yeah, there was certainly quite a bit of dissent brewing within the conservative movement generally within some of these Tea Party groups, more specifically in the run-up to the election, which is when this sort of showdown occurred, when the tensions boiled over here at Freedom Marks. Broadly, within the conservative movement, you know, that this, I think both sides are sort of struggling to adjust to this new era, new style of politics that was ushered in by the Supreme Court Citizens United decision in 2010 and subsequent federal court decisions that allow for this explosion of big money into politics and really empowered some of these big donors and the operatives and groups that sort of had their ear to seize power in some ways from the parties, the political parties and the campaigns themselves, which are, of course, limited in how much money they can take, unlike groups like Freedom Works, nonprofit groups and super PACs. And so you saw tensions both over generally over how this money should be spent, as well as the balance between the parties and the candidates and these outside groups and the big donors. But you saw a lot of debate about whether establishment candidates who were deemed to be sort of more viable in general election matchups with Democrats in particular, so the, on the Republican side where there was kind of a dispute, which is the very dispute that sort of undergirded the Tea Party movement, as to whether it was better to have these principled candidates who maybe appealed to the base but weren't deemed to be electable, weren't deemed to be sort of viable as mainstream candidates in the general election. And then even more specifically, you saw disputes over tactics. We saw this a lot with the Karl Rove Group's Crossroads, where a lot of money was going into television advertisements, and there were grassroots activists, Tea Partiers, and, in fact, establishment GOP operatives who said, hey, you know what, this money would be better spent on ground organizing. In the case of the Freedom Works feud, it seems to be a little bit of both, where there was a dispute over the tactics. There was some thought, not just from Dick Armey, but from loyalists, that Freedom Works was spending too much money on television ads and also on sort of communication stuff. So, you know, accumulating a big Facebook presence and spending a lot of money on Facebook advertising and social media advertising and on a book that was written using Freedom Works resources by the number two, the former number two, now the number one person there with whom Dick Armey had this falling out, Matt Kibbe. And Armey became disenchanted with this, took his dispute to the board of directors of Freedom Works during a meeting in Colorado, in a Tony, Colorado ski town. And the board, you know, this is presented as an armed feud, but the board actually did, in fact, give him clearance and said, you know, we are siding with you. And the board suspended without pay, placing on administrative leave Matt Kibbe, number two, the number three guy there, Adam Brandon. That's sort of where this Washington Post story picks up. Adam Brandon and Matt Kibbe seemed unwilling to accept that. So Dick Armey had this confrontation with them that sounds quite dramatic.
And but it only lasted 6 days, and it looks as if the reversal happened with the promise of this $8 million payoff to Dick Armey by Richard Stevenson, the reclusive Illinois millionaire who's the founder of the for-profit Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
Yeah, that's right. Dick Stevenson, my understanding is he's been sort of a Matt Kibbe loyalist. He goes way back with Dick Armey, but he kind of bonded with Matt Kibbe, both over Matt Kibbe's own bout with testicular cancer, which dates back several years and which he's been clear of now for, I think, at least half a dozen years, and over their sort of shared love of Ayn Rand and really classic libertarian economic philosophy, which Dick Armey, despite being an economist by training, he likes to point that out, and also having been an architect of the Gingrich Revolution, the Republican Revolution of 1994, was seen by many Tea Party activists and by many libertarians as a kind of a bad fit for the Tea Party movement and for Freedom Works. He became known in his post-congressional career as a lobbyist, sort of big money conservative. Terms that we hear thrown about pejoratively by Tea Partiers is rent seeking. This being the sort of corporatist influence over American politics, where big corporations or interest groups are able to pay lobbyists to go and get special treatment from Congress for their principles, for their legislative priorities. And Dick Armey was seen as epitomizing that in some ways by Tea Party activists. So it was odd. I think a lot of folks who watched Dick Armey and FreedomWorks really latch on to the Tea Party movement in 2009. I mean, FreedomWorks is an organization that long predated the Tea Party, but when the Tea Party came along and they positioned themselves out front of the Tea Party movement and were very effective in mobilizing activists and getting them to turn out to rallies and enter their names into FreedomWorks' database and give money to FreedomWorks, FreedomWorks became kind of a leading Tea Party entity, and it was odd to see that, and it was odd to see Dick Armey out front of it. And I think in many ways he was just always kind of a bad fit for it, but he was a guy who knew a lot of very, very wealthy conservatives who could get them to contribute large sums of money, which became even more important after Citizens United, when that money could be spent directly on politics and didn't have to go into issue education and issue advocacy. And so, you know, it will be interesting now to watch what happens with FreedomWorks without Dick Armey at the helm. Even if he was only serving in a figurative way capacity, he was still able to really help out with fundraising. Now there's this one big, big donor, Dick Stevenson, who you mentioned, who apparently has committed to continuing to fund it. But one big donor, even at $12 million a year, does not a political juggernaut make. FreedomWorks has a budget that's upwards of $40 million a year. So unless they're able to appeal to a wider swath of donors, both big donors, not necessarily on the order of Stevenson, but very wealthy folks, and also grassroots folks, you know, they already are sort of seen as losing cachet within the conservative movement, both with the loss of Armey and with the diminishing to some extent of the energy of the Tea Party movement. You know, there's quite a lot of upheaval and transition, and this feud with FreedomWorks is perhaps a more dramatic incarnation of it. But I think stuff like this is happening below the surface across the conservative movement.
Well, just in closing, Kenneth Vogel, it does seem that the Tea Party that started out expressing outrage over what happened on Wall Street in 2008, and many have argued that it's become, instead of a grassroots radical organization that's appalled by government spending, it's turned into a kind of an astroturf organization. And just last week, the Tea Party caucus humiliated the Speaker, Boehner, on his Plan B vote, and they basically went to the mat saying, we're not going to raise taxes on the millionaires and billionaires. But in terms, just in terms of this coup we're talking about, or failed coup, or reversed coup, whatever it is, it seems that on both sides of the argument, on Stevenson's side, he was throwing money at Joe Walsh, the Tea Party guy who lost in the House race against the wounded or the double amputee from the Iraq War, Tammy Duckworth. And on the other side, Dick Armey threw good money after bad with the guy, the Senate candidate in Indiana, Murdoch, and with Todd Akin, after both of those guys had made fools of themselves. So it seems like there's a lot of blame to go around here.
Yeah, that's right. And that is the type of blame that we're seeing more broadly across the conservative movement. I mean, FreedomWorks won some races. Karl Rove's Crossroads groups won far fewer, particularly considering how much more they spent and in how many more races they spent it. Some of that, I think, donors are chalking up to it just being a bad year. Others, donors, though, are seriously asking whether these groups are good investments or whether they're just squandering their money. And there is a strong backlash, even if it's behind the scenes at this point, where donors are asking that, and they're asking that directly, whether they have been taken for a ride, for instance, just quickly with Karl Rove, or Karl Rove in the last literally the last week of the election, was telling some big donors, hey, if we just get another million or $5 million from you, we think that we're going to be able to put Pennsylvania in play and help Mitt Romney win Pennsylvania, because our internal polls show that that's within the margin of error. Well, Mitt Romney, Barack Obama just crushed him in Pennsylvania. Some of these donors, that really stuck out to them. And they ended up asking, hey, did you know that your poll that we were that far away in Pennsylvania and you just wanted more money from us? Or were you that bad at reading the data that you legitimately thought that Pennsylvania was in play? Either way, we're not sure if you're a trustworthy investment going forward.
Well, Ken Vogel, I thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Kenneth Vogel, who is the chief investigative reporter for Politico. He tracks the confluence of money, politics, and influence, and has covered politics and government at all levels, from small-town cop shops and school boards to state houses, Congress, and the presidential campaign trail, traveling during the 2008 campaign with the campaigns of Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Sarah Palin, and Joe Biden. And more recently, he's covered the growth of the Tea Party movement and the super PACs. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with somebody from the Day After group of prominent Syrians planning to take over when Assad falls.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely.